sit down, boys. Have I got a treat for you?
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Digital Soup, the only podcast still trying to decide what the better name is for our upcoming artificial intelligence algorithm. The two choices here, we're going with either Skynet or Legion. What do you guys think?
Skygen, Skynet. Ski jump?
What'd you say, NetGen or Skyly?
Skyly Nyrus.
Scully?
Yes, Scully.
Something like that. Yeah, as you could tell, I finally watched Terminator Dark Fate. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie.
Save it for the show.
Oh,
this is the show. What I loved about it is basically every Terminator movie that came after T2 was ripped from canon like it never existed. It was a lot like the Lady Ghostbusters.
True.
It was like, it doesn't exist.
Yep.
Yeah, I did not enjoy any of the Terminator movies after T2.
I liked the Terminator, was it Salvation?
See, I don't remember liking any of them.
Well.
And I remember that list of, what was the movies? We were listing best sci-fi movies or something last week, and Terminator 3 was in there, and I'm like, what? What? Do you remember what we're talking about? I can't remember the story, but it was...
I do. It was in my ramen story.
Your list, yeah.
Yeah, when I... tried to go fast because I went a little over on my second one.
Oh, a little? Little over?
Just a second or two. I wish you would have just let me finish my thought.
Oh, I was having so much fun blowing that foghorn. It was awesome.
Well, it was hilarious. I still feel like a moron. And it's, I don't know if it was just internet lag or what, but, you know, we call out this timer, you know, and in... keep track of everything while Adam was watching the time for me, gave me the 15-second warning and the ending, and I never heard it, and I just kept on going, and I thought I was in because I didn't hear anything. I'm like, oh, man.
And that was the hilarious thing. You basically read War and Peace on the episode, and then he's like, real. Well, if I go over 60 seconds, just let me know.
Let's be real. I went about 127 seconds. So it's not like I went, you know, War and Peace length here. You know, come on.
Well, the abridged versions.
Yeah. I would say the Cliff Notes version, but no one knows what that is anymore.
Nah. Well, everybody, my name is Jason and not Cliff. And joining me in the virtual studio today is Adam and usually Dave. What you guys been up to this week?
Looking for a way out.
Really?
Yeah, I, too, was looking for a way out.
You guys finally got to play that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, tell me about it. I know nothing about it.
We need to get back to it, but it's cool.
Yeah, we do. So this is a co-op game, strictly co-op, and it's through Origin, PC game. And basically, it's a split screen that you play online, and you play two inmates with this story that kind of converges. And each of you has to do actions and do stuff on your side of the screen to escape prison. And it's different than anything I've played before. It's pretty fascinating.
Definitely not for kids.
No.
There's some language.
Shower
violence.
Scenes.
Yeah, there is a shower. Not showering,
but de-lousing.
Yeah, like when my character got admitted, there he is, stark naked. Yep. And then he turns around as he's finishing, and there's a Conan the Barbarian hanging. It was... pretty shocking.
And Dave's like, best game ever.
Yeah. Never looked so good.
Yeah, Dave was asking, he's like, how do you pause?
Screenshot. You got that, right?
Screenshot.
But no, it's really cool how it does it, though, because as you're going split screen, it's not always just split down the middle. Like, sometimes if one person has a more important task or whatever, it'll shift to like a three-quarter, one-quarter split. and just kind of lets you, you know, operate in that space. But it also, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, sometimes it'll cut scene to the whole screen, and just it's so seamless. It's so well done how it does it. It's very interesting, just the gameplay itself.
And the sound design's fantastic, too. It's, it's good. So that's by Hazelight Studios. I should have put that as my recommendation today.
You should have. It sounds like it's interesting.
We'll do it next week when we beat it.
That's a good idea. Here's the deal. I bought it, and basically anybody can play with me without having to purchase the game. You just have to download the demo, and then if I do an invite, you get access to the full version while we play together.
Basically a friend pass.
Yep.
But it's only two players, though, correct?
Correct. Yep.
They should have done like a Mario Kart 64 with the four. That would be hilarious. I think split screen on a single player, or, you know, like a remote view game is funny. Could you imagine if you split your screen into four, you know, and you're not in the same room, and he's like, I still got to play in this little teeny corner? Come on now, give me the whole screen.
That's a good point. Maybe that's what's different and weird about this, is that usually with when you're doing online games, you have your whole screen as your view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, whoever you're playing with has their own, you know, mm-hmm. and you just see each other. In this one, it's still split screen, even though you're not sitting, you're not doing couch co-op.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, CC, as we like to call it. Yeah. CCOP.
Yep, CCOP. Mm. CCOOP.
Yeah, you know me.
Hey, now, I was wondered why nobody ever has ever done a split screen game corner to corner. I'm in the bottom right, you're in the top left. You know what I'm talking about?
Oof, yuck.
That'd be a challenge.
It would be. That would be terrible, nasty to look at. But this, the way that they've so seamlessly integrated this, it does make me kind of want to look and see what other types of games are out there. Because there's I can picture even like more epic fantasy or whatever it might be, you know, a Metal Gear Solid type, you know, any of these very popular games, having games in that kind of flavor where it's not intense first-person shooter type stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. there's action and there's fights and stuff, but they handle them very well. And it kind of does this cool handoff type thing where, you know, one guy does his moves and the other guy, you know, it's very different. It's very unique, something really cool. And I'd love to see more games like that.
Is it necessary for you to see the other player's screen, though?
Yeah.
Oh, so, it is? So there's like, a purpose for it?
Yeah. So, like, there was one spot where our two characters are roommates, not roommates, but we're in, adjacent cells, like right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And so...
Neighbors, as we would
call
them.
Neighbors, yeah. And so the two guys have worked together, and they've stolen a chisel, I think it was, or a file or something like that.
A chisel.
And you get back in your cell, and while one guy is going through the process of like breaking through the wall behind his toilet, you got to do some stuff there. But the other guy has to be, you lean up against your thing, against your bars, the prison bars, and you're doing lookout because there's guards that patrol. And if they catch you, you're busted. And so while you're split screen, the one guy leaning against the bars controls the looking back and forth, and you're busy working on your screen. Now, for us, we were connected through Discord, so we were talking and telling each other, go, 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 okay, stop.
That's cheating.
You know, and that was a little different. But
you're going to be banned.
Yeah, but I mean, I doubt that. But I mean, if you didn't have that, there's no voice chat in this game, so it's all the screen. So you got to rely on your partner to keep looking around, and you watch their half of the screen to make sure the coast is clear. You work, and then the other guy will try and distract the guards and all this stuff. And so there is a benefit to seeing that.
It's cool.
It's really well done. It's fun.
Yep, we got to do some more.
Sounds like it. Well, speaking of you know, fun games here, should we get right into the ramen?
It's ramen time.
All right. Daybreak Games has formed three new game studios that will each initially focus on one game at a time. First, there's Dimensional Inc. Games, who will continue supporting a popular DC Universe Online MMORPG with tons of free content updates. Daybreak's second studio, and this is one I'm excited about, is Dark Paw Games, who will continue supporting EverQuest 1 and 2 with updates, as well as work on a brand new EverQuest title. That's right, finally, a new game. Now, Dark Paw's mission is to continue to expand upon the unique and amazing fantasy adventure that is EverQuest and EverQuest 2, and develop the next innovation for the franchise. Finally, there's Rogue Planet Games, who is leading the Planet Side series of first-person shooter games. The team is looking to develop the next genre-defining experience for fans of shooters under this new banner, reads a press release. Let's hope Daybreak is finally done with the heartbreak since the overtake of Sony Online Entertainment. God, I'm good.
Apple is imagining their iMac built into a single curved sheet of glass, and this is according to a patent they just filed. According to TheVerge.com, they applied for this patent for this ambitious design. It's a new all-in-one computer. It also integrates its keyboard and screen into this single curved sheet of glass. It's actually kind of fascinating because the article has this line drawing that was submitted to the U.S. Patent Office. And it was filed in May of last year, but it describes how the iMac-like computer's input area and display area could be built into a single continuous surface, while a support structure behind the display could contain the computer's processing unit and provide space for the machine ports. And it looks like a pretty cool-looking design, and there's even a suggestion based on the imagery that's in the patent that the design could allow a MacBook to be docked into the display somehow. And another diagram shows how the iMac could fold down to be easily stored. So it's a pretty radical design, and I guess we'll see in the near future if anything comes out of this for the iMac.
That's neat. I like it a lot.
All right, so I'm bringing this to the world of music. The 2020 NAMM show, which is a music electronics kind of conference show, there was a bit of gear that came out. We're all familiar with a distortion pedal and overdrive pedal. This is a pedal from a company called Ranger, RAINGERFX. They call it the Minibar Liquid Analyzer Overdrive. Now, the reason this is so interesting is because the type of overdrive, the type of distortion you get, is altered by adding different liquids into the pedal. There's a little cup on there, and you pour stuff in. They say that darker colored liquids work well. And in the video, you can see they use things like nail polish remover, water, coffee, soda, different things like that, and it changes the tone pretty drastically on the type of distortion you're getting. So this is a very very cool looking sound effect for music.
Sorry, dude. Four new species of sharks that use their fins to walk have been discovered in the waters off northern Australia and New Guinea. The four new species almost double the total number of known walking shark species to 9. Instead of swimming around, these bottom-dwelling sharks actually walk using their pectoral and pelvic fins, which makes it easier for them to poke their heads under coral and rocks as they look for small fish, snails, and crustaceans to eat. Said study co-author Mark Erdman of Conservative International, the discovery proves that modern sharks have remarkable evolutionary staying power and the ability to adapt to environmental changes, Erdman did tell CNN. I bet every suit over at Sci-Fi Network just had a simultaneous sharkgasm.
Oh. No.
Yes!
Okay. So a new bipartisan bill has been proposed that reforms NSA surveillance. And so this newly introduced bill targets the Patriot Act Section 215, previously used by the U.S. government to collect telephone data from millions of Americans. This is according to ThreatPost.com. And this bill, which was introduced by both a Democrat and a Republican, sharply curtails the Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which gives the government broad power to ask businesses for their records relating to someone who might be involved in terrorism. And so, ultimately, the bill ends the authority for the NSA's massive phone record program. It prohibits the warrantless collection of cell site location and GPS information, as well as browsing history and internet search history, and ensures the government cannot conduct collection for intelligence purposes that would violate the Fourth Amendment in the criminal context. So, it's a potentially a huge overhaul. I don't have any information yet as to where this is at, or if it's going to go through, but something interesting to watch for Americans' privacy.
All right, so coming up very soon, this summer, in fact, at Universal Studios in Japan, you will be able to check out your very first Super Nintendo World theme park. Now, there will be new locations opening up in 2023, along with Universal Studios in Orlando, Hollywood, and Singapore. Now, what is this? It is a theme park set in the Super Nintendo world, including rides such as Super Mario Kart, Yoshi's Adventure rides, and more. Now, even cooler, when you're visiting the Super Nintendo theme park, you can go stay at one of the all-new Atari hotels, because since they can't get their stuff together and release their console on time, they've decided they're going to go in and make an Atari-themed hotel chain. So stay on the lookout for that.
The TurboGrafx-16 competed with the Nintendo Entertainment System and Sega Genesis when it launched in the US back in 1989. It may not have won the 8-bit or 16-bit console wars, but it's a new mini console that has a lot to offer for retro game fans. The mini version of the third-place console will be available for purchase on March 19th for $99 and will include 57 games, but there is a twist. Its built-in game library will consist of both US TurboGrafx-16 titles as well as games released in Japan, where the console was called the PC Engine. All the games are preloaded on the mini console, and each one does allow for quick saves. The TurboGrafx-16 mini supports up to 5 players with the Hori Turbo Tap. That is sold separately. For those who want a retro experience, there are a lot of options to change the display to classic TV 4:3 ratio. It's the higher energy video game system where Sega does what Nintendo don't, so now you're playing with power.
So with the recent outbreak of the Wuhan coronavirus, Johns Hopkins University developed a GIS dashboard. GIS being, of course, Geographic Information Systems. And so they developed this online dashboard to visualize and track the reported case on a daily time scale. So the complete set of data is downloadable as a Google Sheet, and this case data is visualized from data sources including the World Health Organization, the CDC, China CDC, NHC, and DXY, which is a Chinese website aggregating some data together. But for you map nerds out there, this is actually really fascinating, and I'm going to include a link in the show notes that goes to this. But you can track in real time the actual outbreak of where the cases are, and it's kind of interesting and a little bit scary at the same time. But a wonderful tool provided by ArcGIS through Johns Hopkins University. Check this one out.
All right, so I don't know if you guys remember this. We talked about it on the show. It was a Netflix original called Altered Carbon, a sci-fi futuristic kind of show in which people's memory and souls get put into these little discs and they can transfer bodies they call sleeves. It's a very cool show, but the good news is Altered Carbon Season 2 has a brand new announcement, a release date promo coming up. Now, the biggest twist is that Marvel Avengers Endgame star and other Marvel movies, Anthony Mackie, the Falcon himself, is taking over the role of the lead character, Takeshi Kovacs. So very interesting, some big cast. This will premiere, this is the best news, February 27th of 2020. So it's coming up in less than a month. We get to see some more sci-fi goodness.
Nice.
Alrighty. Speaking of Altered Carbon,
mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen Terminator?
Like the original?
Nice.
I saw the nice original.
Segue. You're welcome.
It's time for a Digital Soup recommendation. Sorry.
It's time for Jason to edit himself out of the show.
Digital Soup recommendations.
Well, you know, you've kind of, you know, spoiled it for, you know, all our listeners who are just sitting on the edge of their seats waiting for my recommendation.
Say Toy Story.
But I guess I'll just have to tell them anyway. It is Terminator Dark Fate. I just watched this movie this week and I dug it. If this would have been a super review, I probably would have given it 4
Whoa.
Stars.
It was, I agree. It was very good. I yes. also saw it.
Settle down, Booker T.
Did you
no,
see it, Dave?
I did not.
Oh, man, because I wanted to talk a little bit about it.
Too bad.
I wanted to do a review. Where were you?
Yeah.
No, but there's one point. Can I bring up one point about it, David?
No,
it's not going to ruin it for you because you probably already know what's going on. So anyways, mankind survived Skynet. They were actually able to stop Skynet from killing John Connor, and you know, so he was able to grow up. Well, you think until you watch the movie, but he's able to grow up and stuff. But here's my thoughts on this. So there's a new enemy in Dark Fate. It's almost exactly like Skynet, but it is called Adam.
Well, I'm not spoiling anything for anybody.
But it's called Legion. But here's my thought right here. So the military created Skynet. Well, actually, it was a private company, but for the military, if I remember right, from the original. It's been a while here since I've seen the original Terminator to follow the whole thing in T2. But so it was a military technology that decided that humans were a threat. So then it wiped us out. Well, that got stopped. So then later on, the military decided, well, let's create this other military AI, which again took over and decided man was a threat and killed everybody. If they stop Legion, you know, permanently, I don't know if there's going to be sequels in the future, but if they stop it completely, is there just going to, the military just going to do it again? Create another AI to wipe out mankind?
Can't get away from it.
It's like, yeah, it's our fate, I guess.
It's a pretty dark fate.
We saw how much trouble Jason had, if you remember, way back in the early episodes, like episode 1 or 2. He had so much trouble getting his Echo Dot to stop. I mean, how is he going to get anything else to stop?
Oh, exactly.
But yeah, it's a very good movie. I highly recommend it. Dave, see it. I know you'll enjoy it. Adam and I enjoyed it.
I did want to see it. I haven't had a chance yet, because mainly because the villain is Ghost Rider. And so Gabriel Luna, and I know...
Yeah. I thought I recognized him, but I didn't know where I recognized it from, and I'm not one of those nerds that are like, I'm going to go on IMDb and figure out who this guy is. I just like, I recognize him, and I just left it.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, I didn't have to go to IMDb because I did watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as did you, and Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a pretty big role in the story.
But you're new to the Ghost Rider on there. I watched it originally when it aired, and you just recently watched it, so it's fresher in your mind.
No, I watched those when they aired.
No, dude, you're like 8 seasons behind right now.
Okay, I'm 8 seasons behind right now. I'll play along.
It says it's been like 6.
Anyway.
I'm negative. Adam, what do you have this week?
So we talked a little bit about the dangers of China right now and travel and stuff over there. But my recommendation this week is this fascinating little YouTube channel. And maybe I wouldn't call it a little YouTube channel, but it's Xiaoma NYC. The guy's got 1.49 million subscribers. And this dude is fluent in like Mandarin and some Cantonese and stuff. And it's really fascinating. In a lot of his videos, he records himself going into you know, different Chinese places in NYC, in New York City. And suddenly just he'll talk to people in English. They have a little trouble understanding each other. And then he just busts out perfect Chinese and everybody's like, what the? It's fun
is
to watch.
Is he American? Yeah. I'm looking at him. He looks American.
Yeah, he is. It's fantastic.
So why is his name Xiaomei?
I don't know his full history. I know he spent a year in Beijing and in other things like that, just learning the language. But he's really, really good at the language, to the point where the other Chinese people that are in the room are like, you're really good. You're better than I am. Wow. Everyone's so impressed. It's just really fun to watch.
I think I'm going to have to watch some of this tonight because it does look interesting, cool. Especially if he's pranking.
Well, they're not really pranks. They're just busted out. And no one expects this like white touristy guy to suddenly speak fluent Chinese. It's great.
Well, it is a prank because his very first video says I did a social experiment / prank where as a white guy I walked up to various Chinese vendors in New York City's Chinatown. Okay. So it is a prank, Adam.
Shut up. All right. So that was my recommendation.
Boom, you've been pwned, cool. Son.
Suck it, Jason.
It was a good one. Okay, what do you got there, Dave?
I'm going to recommend something, Adam, and
I hope you do. That's the whole point of this segment.
I'm done. That was a good one, wasn't it? No.
Yeah, it was.
I'm going to recommend something. It's called Infinite Worlds Magazine.
Does it ever end?
And no, they've got their Instagram account linked up. Now, I've been working hard trying to get these guys in touch with Adam and yesterday's sci-fi, because Infinite Worlds Magazine is... primarily, as it says, a magazine. They're putting out their 3 issues. They're beautiful looking. I do have all 3 ordered and on their way.
How much are they each for our listeners?
It depends. Like the first one is almost sold out. They've done three printings of it. He does limited runs. Those ones are like $10, the first two issues.
Oh, not bad.
No, and you can get signed editions for like $13. Now, the third issue, the price did go up. Yeah. The third issue did go up a little bit. I think it's $13.
Oh, that's bull.
But when you look at these things, they are just beautiful. Now, what's cool about it is, A, they're sharing tons of like amazing sci-fi insight. Their Instagram account alone is just amazing because they're sharing all kinds of artwork from classic sci-fi stories, book covers, custom artwork from, you know, sci-fi and fantasy like artists, you know, mm-hmm. from the years. Just really beautiful stuff. But the magazine, they're including stories, they're including interviews with these authors, things like that. And they do have a podcast out, which they've only got two episodes out so far, and it's just the Infinite Worlds podcast. But Infinite Worlds Magazine, if you're a fan of sci-fi, I highly recommend you go check this out. They are at Infinite Worlds Magazine on Instagram. But, man, their stuff, just for the artwork alone, is beautiful. And the way I can't wait to get my hands on these magazines, because when you see the pictures of the inside of this magazine, it looks like it is super high quality with just beautiful artwork and beautifully put together and no ads anywhere. So very, very cool. Just kind of cover to cover sci-fi goodness.
Sweet.
I saw Ziggy Stardust too, so you know it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a Mulder.
Yeah, they cover all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's really cool.
Is it all art or is there any stories in there?
Nope, there's stories, there's interviews, they share the artwork. I mean, it's a mix of all of it. Like, guys are huge sci-fi buffs, and not just the artwork, but the stories, and they know their stuff. Like, today, as we're recording this, I was talking, they had shared a photo of an artist illustration of Elektra, and she's got this, like, big Conan the Barbarian-style sword, but the artwork is from the 90s, and I was like, wow, what? I've never seen her use a weapon like that. And looked it up and replied and said, oh, I see, it's, you know, it was used as a variant cover for this one issue of something with Marvel. And they said, well, actually, it's good research and it is a variant cover, but the artwork came out in the 90s. The comic book that's using it just came out a year ago. Wow. And it's a crazy crossover with like Wolverine and Venom and Conan the Barbarian and Elektra, and it's all really weird. But they are huge into sci-fi, especially the deeper cuts that aren't just
nice.
You know, I mean, they're fans of Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff like that, but they're also really into stuff like Dune and, you know, the more adult themed sci-fi and stuff. There's
Barbarella,
probably. I'm sure I saw some artwork from that. So. Just really a celebration of all things sci-fi, which really makes me want to get them in touch somehow with Adam with Yesterday's Sci-Fi, because I think you guys could do some kind of really awesome collaboration.
Sweet. So
hopefully we can make that work.
Nice.
Listeners, if you're on Instagram or on Twitter,
blow them up, right?
Yeah, send them some messages, tag at Yesterday's Sci-Fi, let them know they need to check out what Adam's doing and get in touch, because we want to see something happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man.
Way to sell yourself there, Adam.
Don't do that.
What's gonna happen here? I'm like Adam's PR machine as he reluctantly keeps putting out episodes because I just pester him about it.
That's awesome. No, it would be great to do something like that. It'd be fascinating. I just don't I don't want them to start feel like they're getting spammed.
Yeah, spam them.
Hit them up with everything.
All 10 of our listeners, hit them up.
So Jason, earlier you told me I was pwned.
Oh yeah.
Now, what's your thought on pwning versus renting?
I think you have that all wrong. Young.
What the hell is going on?
You got something in your throat?
Hold on a second.
You sound like the Scranton Strangler.
Really? That was what I was going for there. No, this was a topic that we were throwing around here for a little bit. I've been wanting to write an article on it, and Dave and I have been talking about it a little bit also, but the whole thing with owning versus renting, and what we mean by that is physical copies of media, be it movies, games, books, what else? Audio, music, etc. Actual
software.
Physical copies, yes. Anything where you have actual physical
hardware,
media.
Cars.
Yes. SARS? No, it's the coronavirus or whatever.
No, cars.
Okay. Versus like we were talking about earlier, and I just called it renting, but basically any type of digital streaming, or it could just be straight up digital purchases of music or movies or whatever, but digital streaming is huge right now. And you have music, be it Spotify, iHeartRadio. What are some of the other digital streaming?
Stitcher,
yeah. Where Pandora. You can subscribe and get all you can consume, yep. Music or movies.
Right. Pandora, you've got sites like, your Hulu and Netflix and mm-hmm. Amazon Prime, Amazon Video, I mean.
And they're great services when you think about them, because you are paying this monthly fee and you have access to a bigger catalog of media than you would have ever been able to purchase on your own. But that's the thing. You don't own it. You never own it. You pay this money and then you decide, hey, I just can't afford to do this anymore. Now you don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And people talk about this, and I actually read a couple of articles, which I wish I would have saved the URLs for and put them in the link, but there was different articles on specifically movies and music about how there needs to be physical copies of this stuff because, God forbid, servers go down and everything is lost. I'm sure they have backups, but just think if all the digital versions are gone, we have lost this now from history. We actually need a physical backup. So if everybody was still purchasing movies on DVD or Blu-ray, music on CDs, somebody would still have a copy of this and they would be able to digitally, remaster these. But if we do lose our digital copies, the archives lose it, it's gone forever because we're just renting it basically. And that's what you're doing when you're streaming it, when you have a subscription, you're just renting the content. You don't actually own any of that.
Nothing physical anyway.
No.
Yeah.
The only thing you own is the memories of watching
it. You own a license to download it. So will this stuff ever go? I mean, a lot of stuff still has a physical media somewhere, but long gone are the days where anybody had like a copy of something. We still have Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff like that, but the sales of that have really, really tanked.
Oh, it is. It has massively dropped. I have some statistics here to throw down at you guys. Looking all back to 2009, these are the statistics from Statista.com. And this is the breakdown of U.S. computer and video game sales from 2009 to 2017. Back in 2009, 80% of all computer and console games were purchased on physical media. Mm-hmm. Only 20% were digital. That has, drastically changed, of course. And the latest statistics are from 2018. I know I said 2017. I do apologize. 2018 was the last statistics. Physical media only comprised 17% of the sales. 83% were streaming, or digital, I should say. Possibly this might include the streaming to Xbox Game Pass or the PlayStation. I can't remember what the PlayStation version is. But,
PlayStation Now?
Yeah, that might be what it is. But digital versions have overtaken massively. I mean, 83% to 17%.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy. And gaming is one of those things that is really affected by digital, because I'm one of those people that are 100% digital, and I am I'm one of the people that are going to make us lose this forever if our digital versions ever go away, because be it Steam on my PC, or Xbox or PlayStation, even my Nintendo Switch, 100% of my games are digital. Mm-hmm. I have kids, so all of my consoles, I did not want them to be taking, discs in and out, scratching these games that cost $60 and they're just no longer good. It's so much easier to have kids just play a game from a menu. And it's also convenient. You don't have to go to a brick and mortar store anymore. You can just sit on your toilet and buy games on your system. Well, Switch. It'd be kind of a long cord if you were doing it. I guess it's everything's wireless, but you'd have to have some mirrors set up so you could see your TV from the toilet, I guess.
You know, it's games are an interesting thing because I was looking for the article right now and I can't find it. But earlier today, I was looking at this article where, and it made me think of you, Jason, actually, because
oh,
of how you like to buy and collect games. Mm-hmm. But people right now, they are buying or they are getting their retro video games, their classic NES, Super NES, all that stuff. They're getting them graded and sealed, much like you would see with high-end sports cards and collector's cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the article. Collectors are spending thousands on video games they'll never play. These are factory-sealed
yeah,
video
that is
games.
Me.
Yeah, it is you. But it's an interesting thought because in the age of streaming, are we going to see the physical games? Is it going to remain just the original NES, SNES, Genesis, you know, all these kinds of things? In this era now, I mean, I can't remember the last time I bought a physical game.
Yeah.
When you look at, looking at this article, they're talking about this guy, he's a dentist that used to collect sports cards, but he spearheaded a $1 million purchase of dozens of games months after game collectors jointly bought a rare Super Mario Brothers game for more than $100,000. A copy of the original Mega Man recently sold at auction for $75,000.
Wow.
Now,
I owned one of those.
Yeah, right? I mean, you think about some of these things, and there's a lot of money being tied up in this, but at what point, if streaming completely takes over, physical games go away, at what point does that collector's market turn into even more of an investment, or does it turn into something that becomes historical and belongs in museums, for example?
Possibly. Mm. And take a look at another thing that digital delivery of your games and or the streaming services have done. They have devastated the resale market. How many of us sold our games once we were done with them? We would take them to like a GameStop or an EB Games or a Funko Land back in the day. We would sell our used games, get some cash, and get a new game. Well, if you're all digital, you cannot resell those games. Those games are yours permanently, and that is one of that has to be one of the main factors of why GameStop is going under right now. They're closing so many of their stores is because nobody is buying physical games anymore. Mm-hmm. These stats prove it. 83% of people buy them digitally, 17% buy the actual game. Why would you need a GameStop? Nobody goes into there to buy the games anymore.
Well, I think if you look at things like Steam and the way that most games are released, we've also had a huge saturation in new games and game developers and things that have made it easy to create games and distribute them. And to me, streaming, no matter what it is, it's whether it's video games, whether it's music, whether it's movies, is about convenience, which is I don't have to do anything. I don't have to get up and put a disc in even if I had it. Everything's readily available. I can stream it to my phone. I have it on multiple devices. This is the future, and this is the way it's going to go. And I think the physical stuff is going to continue to become, you know, relic and like more like hipster style. You know what I mean? Like, hey, the people are still putting out vinyl albums to have something. At some point, cassette tapes are going to become retroactive. We're going to start seeing tapes come out again, I think.
They're already happening.
Are they?
Small market. Yeah, especially that started really popping up with Guardians of the Galaxy because of the mixtape.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And so you start seeing a little bit more of these things happening with that. But that's a great point about the quote-unquote hipster collecting, where vinyl's making a bit of a comeback. Shooting analog film photography, making a bit of a comeback. We're seeing these companies starting to make film more and more, you know, for different types of cameras and things like that, just because there is a market, a segment that really likes it. But the problem is it gets increasingly more expensive for the physical stuff just because the demand for it's so much less. Now, the one distinction I think we need to look at, we talk about gaming, and if you go to Steam and you buy a game for your PC, or you go to the Xbox store and you buy a game and you download it, you have that. As long as you can access that account, you can re-download it if you upgrade your system, whatever the case is.
Asterisk, I'll let you continue, but asterisk there.
Go ahead,
there.
Add in your thought.
I cannot give you the actual titles, but it's happened several times on different platforms, including Steam. all of a sudden Steam loses the rights to carry that game on their platform.
Okay.
Even though you purchased that game, as long as it's still downloaded onto your computer, you're able to play that just fine. But if you ever need to re-download that, it's no longer available.
Right. And that was kind of the point I was going to make. You don't see it happen as often in those scenarios, but you look at something like Spotify or Netflix. They're constantly, well, Spotify doesn't drop music out as much. You don't see that often, but Netflix is notorious. I mean, there's entire websites whose only purpose is letting people know what's coming and going on Netflix, because they're constantly gaining and losing licenses for different programming and adding new stuff and removing other stuff because their license is up, and then they bring it back. And in something like that, you're at their mercy. Whatever they have is what you have access to.
Exactly. And it is, we're in a world of convenience. I know I utilize it for everything. I mean, I stream 100% all of my music, movies, television, and games. I mean, I subscribe to YouTube TV. I don't even get my cable the regular way. I get it via streaming.
You don't stream your games. I mean, you're playing digital versions.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I guess I should.
Yeah, you are streaming your music. You're streaming your television, you know, YouTube and TV and all that stuff. So there is a bit of a distinction there, you know, but still it's very interesting. Now think about this. Let's talk about music for a second. With the rise of, and it's kind of just today's culture general, you know, distribution channels, it is amazing as a creator because we have access where you or I mean, we do this show every single week. If this was 20 years ago, the only way we do a show like this is if we can convince a local radio station to let us do it, you know? And so we've got these new distribution channels, which makes it much easier for creators and people who want to do stuff to make something and put it out there, which is amazing. We see it in the independent game. You know, go look through Steam and you'll see a bazillion new indie games coming out all the time, some of which are very good. But the downside to that is that it also completely saturates the market, devalues the market. Look at streaming music. When it used to be all physical albums, be it you know, records, be it cassettes, 8-tracks, you know, CDs, whatever it was, there was still something physical being sold. Now, granted, a ton of money wasn't made on album sales, but there was much more made on album sales then than what these artists are seeing now, you know, because they're seeing, you know, fractions of a penny on each play of their song on Spotify or Google Play Music or whatever it is, you know, iTunes Music or whatever it's called. And so it's really changed the landscape there too, where it's now much easier for anyone to get involved, but it's much harder to make money as a full-time artist or game developer or filmmaker, because it's, you know, there's just so much easier distribution that we're seeing the whole landscape really change a lot. I mean, film is seeing this in a big way as well.
Yep.
While we're talking about music here, I want to throw up some stats here from 2018. This is from a website called ifpi.org. Not exactly sure what that stands for, but they do a lot of statistics and stuff for different industries. And this one is specifically on the recording industry's global revenues for 2018. 25% of the revenue came from physical media. This is your traditional, I guess even vinyl would be in here. So vinyl, tape, CD, even DVD and Blu-ray music, which I'm sure doesn't make up much of the physical. But only 25% is physical now. 12% is streaming, digital streaming. So 12% of people stream. Sorry, I got that wrong. 12% is digital purchases. More people are actually purchasing physical media than purchasing the songs digitally. But the big piece of the pie here, 47% streams their music.
Yep.
So the bulk of all music listeners, fans, lovers, etc., stream their music. They do not purchase it either physical or digital.
Bulk of all lovers, Adam, stream their music.
I was going to say, that's good to know. Lovers like to stream music too.
Even lovers stream music.
They're like
Little Barry White.
They're like, Alexa, hit some Barry White.
Hey, girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like you mentioned, Dave, I mean, I would love to see the actual stats on this, but that stat that you quoted there, I've heard before too. They just get pennies per listen, whatever it is. Now, if you are a heavy listen to, like, I believe Drake is one of the top streaming for some reason. I have no idea. I don't even like the guy's music, I should say. I liked him better when he was in the wheelchair, but he...
Degrassi.
He was whatever that show was.
Degrassi Junior High or Degrassi High.
Yeah. So he, I guess, I think he does make bank because there's so much streaming of his and some of the other, like Billie Eilish. Yep. Is that her name? Billie Eilish. And some of these other ones that are really popular now with today's kids, they are getting a lot of listens on all the different platforms. So they probably are making as much as the traditional, you know, groups did back in the day with physical media.
Right.
But I mean, those that are just like, say, more mainstream, they're probably not making hardly anything because they're not selling physical media and not a whole lot of people are streaming them.
Well, and that goes back to what I was saying. I don't know if being more mainstream is what you're meaning to say. I'm thinking more independent, but you know, you look at like a Billie Eilish, a Taylor Swift, a Drake, a Metallica, a, you know, insert huge band here. They have big media machines and agents, and they have all this stuff behind them. And they're, in a lot of ways, scrambling, trying to figure out how to navigate this new culture of distribution. And what you're seeing is people, Billie Eilish might be a good example of this because this is a girl who, if I'm not mistaken, she got her start. Her and her brother recorded the album in their bedroom and put this thing out, and it went crazy from there. I mean, there's who's that one lady on YouTube that remakes a lot of songs in the style of Ali Spagnola or something like that?
No idea.
This is she'll take like a popular song.
Is she the hottie?
I don't know. She'll take a popular song, though, and then she will. She does a lot of fitness workout stuff, too, but she'll take a popular song, and she's very talented, and she'll say, oh, okay, so here's Michael Jackson's Thriller. Let me show you live, as you know, and she does it in a very entertaining way. Like, here, I'm going to remake Thriller in the sound of Green Day or something just bizarre, you know? And it's that kind of stuff that now is getting much easier. Now, it's not all just parody stuff. It's, you know, Adam, let's say you decided, I want to make an album. Mm-hmm. You know, you have music on Spotify. Crying out loud, I have one song on Spotify with one of my bandmates, and it's nothing.
Ooh, how much have you made?
Nothing. He listed it. It's under him. But, I mean, I'm the drummer on it, and it's like anyone can do that. You know, and it's very interesting, very, very exciting because so many doors have opened up because of this. Now, the thing is where it's going to come down to, we're all in our 40s. A lot of these artists have been toiling for years under the old model, thinking I got to get, you know, signed with a label, and then I've got to put together this and do that and follow this normal distribution channel through this label and this and that. And now it's the people that are able to figure out, like, wait a minute, I can go directly to the consumer, the listener, and build a fan base. How many times have you seen it where someone, you know, builds a fan base through something like YouTube or TikTok or you name it, and they get a huge following and they bypass the whole agent and studio and all that stuff. And suddenly they're, you know, a serious artist, winning Grammys, winning Oscars, winning whatever, you know, and it
and
happens.
Going that route, they get 100% of their earnings too. Well, they don't have to share that with a label or with an agent, etc.
Yep.
Hey, can I? I just found an article on Yahoo Finance of all places.
Sure.
But this is okay. We're talking about Drake here. His latest album, Scorpion, just surpassed 10 billion streams on Apple Music.
Yep.
So that is Apple Music alone, not Spotify, not iHeartRadio. I'm assuming it because it specifically says Apple Music. And they broke it down. He earns 0.007 cents per stream on Apple Music, which equals out to $78 million. Now,
that's still pretty
dang.
Wow.
Is that good or is that bad? Because you're thinking about it. if Metallica released an album and they sold not 10 billion albums, but say they sold a million albums, they would get way more than $78 million.
Would they?
Well, yeah, because you'd have to think they get at least $5 on every CD. I don't know how it breaks down. How much would they make per CD?
I don't think so.
All the costs associated with it, but
I don't know. It's going to depend on the streaming service too. I just read something. You know the song "Happy" by Pharrell.
Yep.
Yes,
he made $2,700 on Pandora total.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. $2,700 from the Pandora streaming
everywhere.
Yeah, wow. I'm sure he made more on other things like Spotify and Apple and things like that. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a lot of nuance and a lot of stuff I don't know about how any of that streaming works with making money. I know my old band Skywarden, we were distributed through streaming services, Spotify, Apple, all that stuff. And after 10 years, I finally withdrew my $16 I'd earned. Closed it. Like, you know what? Our album came out in 2011. I think we're good.
Right. What I was going to say is I looked up Metallica. I can't find exact numbers on what they make, but their biggest selling album to date is still their self-titled album known as the Black Album, Metallica, in 1991, with almost 31 million copies. But when you think of that, you get the label taking a huge chunk.
Oh, I know.
You get the physical media distribution center. There's a cost to the materials to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So your packaging, your marketing, your artwork, all of that stuff. So when it all adds up, I bet you those figures are still pretty close. I'm sure they made a little more with a physical album sale. A lot of that's going to depend on their contracts too. But in reality, I mean, he sold what? He had 10 billion downloads or streams?
10 billion streams, yes.
And that's of a song. That's not necessarily the full album. That's just
a single song.
That's just someone going out making, and that's the big difference with music today is that you don't see artists worried about the full album as much. They still do it, but it's now so much about if I can get a hit song, that song might get, maybe not 10 billion, but maybe you get 40 million streams, and instead of making $78 million, you make $2 million or whatever it is, with one hit song. So, I mean, yeah. When you look at
it, I'd be happy with that personally.
I know a lot is made of the whole streaming and digital audio is killing the music field, but I think what it's doing is it's killing the record labels. Bankroll this stuff, which at the end of the day, I think we're still going to see music being provided, which is what's interesting about this, where streaming has so many downsides that we hear about from that end of it. But when you really look at what's happening, it's just everything's evolving and changing. When we went from, vinyl to 8-tracks, that was huge. You could take your music in the car with you. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah.
And it's like
you could
all
skip
of these
tracks too. You didn't have to right. move the needle off to a certain point. You
right.
could just hit the button and go to the next song.
So when you look at this stuff, I don't know that it necessarily is going to kill music or film or, books or whatever it is. I think it's just going to change the business model more than anything. I mean, books is an interesting one for me. I think we'll still see physical books printed. And I think we'll still see physical media in some sort made for all of this stuff.
It's
not in mass, not like it used to, but I think physical books will still happen. The one area which, comes to mind for me that it's completely gone, look at what Adobe is doing. They've went completely subscription-based. If you want to use Adobe, other than like their Photoshop Elements or, stuff like that, even Lightroom, it's all cloud-based, Creative Cloud. Yep. You have to subscribe. You don't own anything. And if you stop paying them, your catalog is still there, but everything's disabled. You can't do, there's some functions you can still use, but pretty much it's disabled, rendered useless. So you're stuck. And that side of things is kind of more, I don't want to say disheartening, but more concerning to me than with music or entertainment. You know what I mean? Gaming and music and movies and all of that. I think that stuff will still continue to be made, and it's that's more of an impact on how it's going to be distributed and, you know, cutting out middlemen basically. But some stuff like that, when it's subscription only, like what Adobe's doing, you know, you're either in or you're not. And granted, that leaves room for other companies to come in and do something different where, you know, Adobe's not even giving you, they're like streaming software. They're not like Capture One, which is another editing service. You can pay for it monthly or you can buy it outright, but it's a digital copy either way, you know? And so mm-hmm. it's a little different, but it's concerning on that front.
There, I mean, there are benefits to subscription-based PC software like you're talking about. One is you always have the most up-to-date version, mm-hmm. which is nice. Any, you know, bug fixes, etc., is automatically done server-side. If there's anything that has to be done with your, you know, local client, the next time you launch it, it'll update it. That is great. I agree there that that is nice. But subscriptions mm-hmm. are a rabbit hole, like you're gonna say. I got Spotify. I'm enjoying Spotify, so I'm gonna pay my $10 a month. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really need Photoshop. I'm gonna pay my $10 a month for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Hulu. I gotta have some Hulu. You know, I gotta watch some movies, etc. So you're doing these little, you know, subscriptions. You think, hey, this isn't much, but then at the end of the month, you take a look at your subscription totals, and you're paying over $100 a month for subscriptions for PC software and or entertainment. And that is why you guys laugh at me all the time, but I use GIMP. GIMP's completely free. I am not a major photo editor or anything like that. I just do little things that I need to do, so GIMP is perfect for me. I used to have Office 365 through my schooling, but now I've been out of school for so long, my accounts have been deactivated. I have 100% switched over to LibreOffice. And it does everything I need. It's fully compatible with any, you know, Word documents I might download, etc. So there are, like Dave said, there's other options out there. It doesn't have to be free like me. I'm just, you know, a cheapskate, so I look for all the free stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are one and done things out there that you can buy, and it's going to work for you. There's lots of different photo editing software. There's lots of different office suites that you could purchase once and then keep using it. Mm-hmm. I have a subscription, not a subscription, I have a license key for Office 2007, but that is so old now that I didn't even install it on my Windows 10 machine. I'm like, I'm just going to get LibreOffice. I know it's going to work way better than right. what Office 2007 would.
I think it all comes down to what are you trying to accomplish and what's in your budget mm-hmm. and what's going to work for you. It depends on your internet connection. It depends on where you're going to be watching stuff. You know, it's on the one hand, it's just awesome that there's so many options. You know, there's Spotify, there's Amazon Prime, there's Apple Music, whatever it is over there. There's different streaming services and different ways to purchase digital media, digital movies. But I think, I mean, the writing's on the wall for physical media. It's going to be more of a collection item, or if you're in an offline yeah. situation where you need to have movies at your cabin where you have no internet access, you know,
right.
stuff like that where you're going to need to use it. And it's interesting to see how everybody is navigating, you know, handling the money part of that and everything, and they're finding models that are working, and it's fascinating mm-hmm. stuff. But I'm going to continue to use streaming services as much as possible and not certainly. Buy DVDs and discs anymore.
Well, and for me, I mean, you look at the impact on the environment and all of that. There's that side of it to look at too. But the one area for me where it's so nice is that I love reading. And it's so much easier to have a Kindle that I can have 1,000 books in mm-hmm. rather than try and fit 1,000 books into my house, you know, or read them and sell them or whatever it is. Same thing with music. You know, it's nice to have access and listen to this stuff. And if there's an artist that I really, really love and I want to support, I will still buy a physical copy now and then. It doesn't happen very often anymore. But, you know, I think that's the convenience is such a big thing in the space and everything else. Now, off topic a little bit, going back to Photoshop and the cost for this stuff, I know Adobe gets a lot of heat because you can do that photographer plan, which is $10 a month, right? That gives mm-hmm. you the full Lightroom and full Photoshop, okay? the last version, the last full version of Photoshop standalone that you could buy, full version was $699 If you were a previous user of the previous year's version, the upgrade was $200 Lightroom, oh no, that's not even the CS6 extended. If you wanted the extended Photoshop, which lets you, you know, work with 3D stuff, that was $1,000 to purchase and $399 to upgrade. Now, Lightroom was $200 standalone and like $99, and some deals had it for even $79 to upgrade with the previous version. When you bundle that together, that's a huge cost savings, even though you're paying $120 a year to get those two. That's pretty massive, though. Yeah, so, I mean, even on that side, it feels like you're just stuck, like Jason, you were talking about, $9.99 here, $10 there. It adds up. It certainly does, but it's still way less than having to shell out, oh, man, I need the new, I need Photoshop, you know, and I need to be able to do this and that, so let me drop, you know, between $400 to $1,000, depending on if I can actually upgrade it. So
going back to games here real fast, I know we're jumping all over the place with this topic.
Sure.
But going back to games, when we had physical cartridges and physical CDs and DVDs for all of these past consoles here, that's everybody had to buy those to actually play the games. You had no other availability to you.
Right.
So there is, with the resale market and the collectors, and retro gaming is huge right now. People want these classic cartridges and DVDs and Blu-rays and CDs, right? You know, their eBay is going crazy. People are just buying them off eBay right and left. Let's jump up to 2018 and remember that stat I showed you. What was it? 73% of gamers are now purchasing everything digitally. Yep. 20 years from now, 30 years from now, where we're in the same place we are now to where gaming started, there is going to be limited or no physical copies of any of these games. And you know for a fact that the companies 30 years from now are not going to have digital versions of those games because currently right now you can barely get any of those classics in the digital versions, just very small selections. So all these games that are coming out today, nobody's going to be able to play them 30 years from now the way this is going.
You know, it makes me think of something. This is a totally different topic, which we're not going to explore that, but just kind of a thought. We talk about the whole reboot culture with Hollywood.
Yeah.
Think of it in terms of what you were just talking about in gaming, though. If 30 years from now, no one can play anything because those things just don't exist, how lazy will game developers get and start looking back and going like, oh, we've got this new game, and you know, here's what it is.
Remake that Goose game.
Yeah, let's remake Angry Goose.
Let's name it this time.
Yeah, Unnamed Goose Game. And now it's the Named Goose Game.
Named Goose Game.
And they can basically re-release the ones that just really were fan favorites. You know, you look 30 years from now and see some new Witcher release that's basically taking the story, updating it to whatever current systems there are, and re-releasing the same story from now. 30 years from now, people aren't going to remember that. You know, the gamers that are playing Witcher now, they'll remember it like we remember playing, you know, Mario Kart or whatever. But there'll be huge sections of the population that'll never have played it. And that's still going to be a huge moneymaker, I think. It'll mean a lot of stuff unless it was a blockbuster gets lost because they're not going to do it to every game. But
and that's why the people in the industry, they really need to do something. They need to organize some type of, not a salvage group, but an archiving group to where every digital media right now is backed up physically to, you know, some type of disk, some type of, you know, data storage that is long-term, you know, viability, and, you know, lock these away in a vault, in a Disney vault, lock them away in there so that we don't lose this part of history.
Yeah.
Because I'm not joking. movies today could be gone. Mm-hmm. All your television, the greats. I mean, right now we have remastered movies from the 20s and the 30s because yep. we still have those on, I was going to say cellulite, but it's a celluloid, right?
Yep, film.
We still have them on film and they are protected. And then every so often they don't last forever. I believe what I've read is they run them through the machines and they make new copies and then they put those ones away and they save them on newer media and put those away. That's what we need to make sure we do to everything.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to lose this as a civilization. Now people are going to go, Jason, what are you talking about? Oh, we're going to lose some games. We're going to lose some music, but that's important. Mm-hmm. Music, any type of this pulp culture media is actually important. Mm-hmm. Games and movies and music trap a time, you know, a certain segment of time forever. Mm-hmm. And you go back and you listen to that and you can put yourself back into that time. You listen to some 20s music and you can kind of, you know, think back, oh, I'm back in, there's prohibition going on. All I want is a drink, but I can't get a drink. Let's go to what they call them, flappers and all that kind of stuff. But
speakeasy.
Speakeasies. We don't want to lose this culture and we need to archive it. And I guess I'm going to have to start a GoFundMe to get this done.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting too, because a lot of this stuff ends up being, you know, from a historical standpoint, a bit of commentary on the state of things, you know, culturally, as you look back. I mean, when you look at music, for example, and you pull music from the 40s, 50s, whatever it is, 60s, how much of that music was influenced so heavily by what was happening culturally?
Yep,
and
exactly.
Plays along with it. Now, games... whether that is influences much culturally, like music would be, for example, but film is definitely there. Games, I think there is an element of that, but it's hard to say.
It's more of a nostalgia,
yeah.
I think, which wouldn't affect people who are born 20 years from now because they wouldn't have that feeling.
Right.
But I still think that we need to, because my kids weren't born in the 70s, 80s, 90s. They were born in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But they enjoy a classic 8-bit Nintendo game. Mm-hmm. Yep. They enjoy that type of stuff. That you don't have to be around in that time to understand that these games were good.
Let me ask you this then, and this is going to be an old man get off my lawn type of comment. Things, music today is just not the same, you know, that kind of a thing.
Oh, it isn't.
No. Well, we.
I say that all the time. I do feel like an old man.
I know, but think of it this way then.
Call me on my cell phone. What, really? $78 million?
Right. Well, and this is what I'm getting at, though. When you look at, I mean, there's some games that are going to stand the test of time, I think, that are out now. But if you look at music, how many artists are putting out music now that will stand up to the test of time in the same way that, you know,
Elvis, you know, the Beatles, Elvis, yeah. The Doors,
any of that, or you know, even
you don't think Lil Wayne's going to be on classic rock station 20 years from now?
No.
Whoa, what is that?
Well, and it's just
was that my Lil Wayne?
I don't know what that was, but I mean, how much of that? And so at that point, it's like there's kind of this mentality of you hate to see anything forgotten, but is the quality of what's being put out right now, is it meant to be a long-term, like, you know, legacy? Or is it meant to be like, hey, here's my hit single, love it for now and take off, you know, I don't care what happens to
it's just
a
money grab is all you're saying.
Right, yeah. And how much of it, you know, that's the interesting thing. I'm sure there are artists that are making music now that will be remembered, that is impactful in that sense. But I don't know. I have a hard time seeing it as much, you know. Film-wise, definitely stuff going on in the movies. But we've talked about that, too. Everything's going the way of the mega blockbuster. And there's a ton of other movies released, but they're not getting the public and kind of cultural accolades that they should, because they're buried in a theater, if they even make it into a theater, underneath the Marvel Avengers movies and whatever else. And I love those movies, don't get me wrong. But I mean, you know, the whole idea of a B movie, you know, we've talked about that before, but all of those movies, you know, a movie like Groundhog Day or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, things like that, you know, The Breakfast Club, those movies were culturally significant when it comes to their time periods.
Yeah.
Those kind of movies aren't making that big of a splash today. You know, the big movies that'll be remembered 40, 50 years from now will be what? Endgame and maybe Star Wars and, you know, some of that, but
Howard the Duck. Hard to say.
Yeah. Howard Interesting
the Duck.
Thought.
Yep. Probably Howard the Duck.
Greatest movie of all time.
You got that right.
I need to rewatch it again.
I think it might be time to put the lid on the soup. So be sure to head on over to digitalsouppodcast.com for all things Digital Soup. And of course, listen and subscribe to us pretty much anywhere where you can hear podcasts. That's Apple, that's Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio is what I meant to say. Tune in, you know, you name it, we're there. Hit us up at Digital Soupcast on Twitter. And of course, if you like what you're hearing and you want to leave us a tip, head on over to our Patreon page, which will be linked here in the show notes. So from all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, to all of you listeners, whether you stream, whether you rent, whether you purchase, just go enjoy what you want to enjoy. And have an awesome week. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, guys, and stay tuned for the 8-track release of this episode in approximately 3 weeks.
Later, Gators. And don't forget to head on over to digitalsouppodcast.com where you can purchase this episode and all our episodes on CD.
Can you imagine if we did that?
Oh, man, that'd be crazy.
It's the Digital Soup Podcast.